Welcome to Reframe, the podcast where we challenge the status quo. I'm your host, Helen Darby Dowman, and I'll be joined by expert researchers from Nottingham Trent University. Whether you're a curious mind or a critical thinker, listen as we unpack common beliefs and offer fresh perspective on the headlines that shape our world. In today's episode, we're questioning an assumption we all make, that access to justice is something everyone can rely on, should we ever need it. For many, the legal system is seen as a safety net. But does it really work that way for everyone? We're joined by Dr. Liz Curran, Associate Professor at Nottingham Law School and a legal expert with decades of experience, to help us uncover the truths we might not be seeing. Liz, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
So how does your research challenge the idea that justice is freely available to everyone in our society?
Well, it challenges the whole idea because justice is not freely available to everybody in society. In fact, particularly in the UK, we're developing a two-tier justice system where we have a justice system for those who have the resources, if you like, the repeat players, who often have the capacity to get private lawyers, to use the courts that are taxpayer-funded, and large corporations who can be in court on a matter, commercial matter, for 6 weeks at a time. And yet when people cut or there's austerity, they cut the poor, the legal support services that are supposed to be there for the poor who can't afford legal help or to get knowledge of their legal rights. The other sad thing about the UK at the moment is that often the services are now funded, or charities are funded, for what we call a one-off advice. So what you see is people who make their way in an unnavigable system because of all the cuts and the charities that have folded or have reached capacity because there's so few of them left. And then they make their way and they might get a one-off advice, and that advice is the law's been broken, your rights have been infringed. And they say, well, that's great to know, but where shall I go for help? And they say, well, I'm really sorry, because you're poor or you're disadvantaged, there's nothing out there for you. So it's not a great landscape in the UK. There are other pressures internationally as well. It's not just limited to the UK, and we can do justice better. One of the things that's an underpinning of a democracy, supposedly, is the rule of law, which is where people who are the parliaments, who pass the laws, have an obligation to ensure that the common person can understand those laws and avail themselves of protections when they're breached. Unfortunately, at the moment, there's not a lot of people centred justice, and a lot of people are missing out. And so a basic tenet of a democracy is equality before the law, and that's currently being challenged. And there is a constitutional obligation on the government in the UK and on other bodies like the regulators to improve access to justice, and we need some more action.
So what are some of the biggest barriers preventing vulnerable groups from accessing legal help, like outside of just it being financial constraints?
Well, the first thing is a lot of people don't know there are free legal services out there, so there might not be the financial constraint in the first place. So it's about understanding. I mean, the second thing I think is not knowing the problem is legal. And so that means that you're not going to seek help for a whole range of things. And also that goes to their providers. So their trusted intermediaries, their doctor, their financial counsellor, their counsellor. They may not know that something that is a problem, say debt, housing, income support, it may be capable of a legal solution. With a bit of legal help, they might get more options or more things that can help them improve their financial situation or reduce their stress or support their children. So, for instance, a classic example is utility bills. There are certain things that a lawyer can help with that might mean they've got more money to put food on the table. The other thing is trust and confidence. I think people have a real issue with trust and confidence in the legal system, and I think there's a piece of work there for lawyers to listen to that message. Lawyers will often say that, oh no, all the surveys say that there is trust and confidence in the legal system, but in fact, if you drill down and you look at those that research, it's the trust and confidence levels of the disadvantaged and vulnerable are extremely low, because they often had poor experiences of lawyers or the legal system, often because they're the ones who are dragged to the courts, whereas the others with the wherewithal are used the courts to access their rights. So there's a huge gap there. There's an issue of confidence and being able to take the next steps. People are often overwhelmed, and as I said earlier, they have multiple and cascading legal problems, and so they will often say that this problem is not as important, when in fact this problem may actually help with all their other problems. So it's this issue of early intervention, prevention, so that problems don't escalate, and also so that we can alleviate their pain and suffering, for want of a better word. I think the other issue is legal empowerment. I think that there's a huge piece in that people feel a sense of hopelessness. I had an example in my UK research recently where someone was saying the authority told them it was a no, and then when they got the help of the lawyer, they said, now I know when an authority says it's a no, it's a maybe.
So Liz, your research highlights a two-tier system. Can you tell us what this is and how this inequality affects people's lives on a daily basis?
Yes. Firstly, what I would say is a two-tiered system results from people who have resources, who are wealthy, and that includes corporations, who can use the courts, who can afford big private lawyers, in fact, often big private lawyers, to intimidate poor and vulnerable and disadvantaged people who don't know their legal rights. So they can be replete players in the system. They can take advantage of the system. I'll give you an example of that and how it played out, the postmaster situation, which I've written on previously. So you had the post office and Horizon with lawyers doing all sorts of really weird things that were, you know, on the fringe, ones being reported to the Solicitors Regulatory Authority, and really going beyond what their legal role or responsibility was, and using that in order to harm the rights of the sub-postmasters or the community. Then on the other hand, you have another group who don't have access to legal services, who don't know how to identify a legal problem as capable of a solution because of poor legal capability, who don't have the confidence, who are splintered and siloed so that they don't know that the problem is being encountered by a whole lot of other people because there's no form to get it holistically dealt with and trends identified by a community legal centre network so that those people can realise they're not alone and not be picked off like the sub-postmasters were. So what you have is you have a system that's designed to support the well-resourced, and every time you need to save money, it's what can legal support services do for less? Let's reduce your funding to the poor and disadvantaged, and we're not looking at that other piece. So that creates a two-tier justice system where those who don't know their legal rights, who don't have the wherewithal, who can be hoodwinked, for want of a better word, by authorities who do have the big lawyers in town, they are at a disadvantage, and yet those well-resourced organisations are the ones that use the courts the most, and they'll take weeks and weeks on end, and yet the people at the lower level can't even get access to the courts. The other problem is digitised justice. So again, that may have benefits for big corporations and for the courts, and I'm not saying it's all wrong, but what happens is it ignores the digital exclusion. If I don't own a computer, if I'm illiterate, and there's high levels of people in the UK who can mask their literacy levels, or if I'm from a non-English speaking background, I don't have the capacity to use digital support, and also with the charity sector being underfunded and at capability, they no longer have the time to assist people in all the digitised processes that rely on their ability to put evidence in a portal to prove their case. So again, they're being disadvantaged by this two-tier justice system.
Liz, I know you've done years of work elsewhere in the world. What are the lessons that we could learn here in the UK from international models like in Australia and Canada that might offer solutions to the crisis?
Three main things. I think the first is you can fund services to all be in one place so that people don't have to go elsewhere when they're in state of flux and trauma and have complex issues to navigate. So internationally, there are examples of integrated legal practice where community lawyers are based in other settings. Health justice partnerships are a critical one, and that's where the lawyers are working closely with the trusted intermediaries to whom the research tells us people are most likely to turn to for help with legal problems, even though they don't know that they're legal. So there's a whole realm of things like what we don't do in the UK is something called secondary consultations. That is where the lawyer is available on the phone in a timely way to trusted intermediaries who are there with a client or patient at the point of need, who turn to the lawyer and say, I've got a client with a whole lot of debts and they're saying they're going to come tomorrow. And what it means is the lawyer on the spot can say, that's not possible, there's a process, they're fine, refer them to us, yes, it's something we can help with. And then that worker then knows for every other client that presents with those problems that it is a legal problem. So the downstream savings there are incredible. So one short secondary consultation, according to my research, often has a downstream effect for 40 other clients. So the lawyers will not even know that unless it's counted, as I do. So there's Health Justice Partnerships, Integrated Legal Practice. There are examples of lawyers in early childhood services, maternal and child health services. So early on, when authorities want to remove a baby, the mother doesn't get stressed because they know their rights, and then they can have a conversation with the authority so that the child isn't taken away. So we know the incredible impact on children of removal for the rest of their lives. So those sorts of early interventions can start to happen. So it's not just in health and allied health services. You can embed community lawyers in schools, in early childhood, in maternal health, child health teams. The other key piece that's missing in the UK, in my view, is the whole piece of work around legal empowerment. There are so many communities that are struggling, and I think that working closely with in a community development model where you work in deprived communities with different groups, like work with the diabetes group, the elderly people, about their consumer rights, work around wills and, you know, what having a will can mean and how simple it can be, so that when you pass, it's not going to lead to family breakdown and argument and everything. And also advanced care planning, like what happens if I get unwell, if I get dementia, what do I need to do, powers of attorney. You can do that in a sort of community development, legal empowerment model. Peer-to-peer learning is something that we don't really do in the UK, where we train. We know there's not enough money for legal services, and legal support is critical. It has, as Dame Hazelgen says, legal heft. Often it's when a community organisation or a client says they've had advice from a lawyer that the decision maker will suddenly change their mind and start to behave properly. So there's legal heft behind having that legal help. But also there's certain things that a community member, when they know their rights, they can help others in their community, and that stretches the finite funds further. So more awareness of the role of us as a society in enabling people to be legally empowered so that they can have a direct say in decisions about them.
What is one key insight you'd like our listeners to take away from this conversation?
I think that with correct justice interventions, so many other problems that people experience can be resolved. One of the key things is that if community members and their supporters, so the services that they are most likely to turn to for help, I think the figures are about 84% of people don't turn to a lawyer for their legal problems in the first instance. So if we can train up what I call the trusted intermediaries to be better able to identify something as a legal issue, then we can start having the conversation about the other options available that people are currently not exploring. People's perception of the law is a real problem, and I think that goes to the core about how lawyering is done. And I think that the focus needs to be on the person and the client, not always on what the legal system requires.
Liz, thank you so much for giving us some insight into this area. If you'd like to find out more about Liz's work, please have a look in the episode description.
You've been listening to the Reframe podcast by Nottingham Trent University. For all the latest news from the research community at NTU, follow us on LinkedIn at NTU Research, or sign up to our research newsletter by visiting ntu.ac.uk/research.